You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we'd rather be Spartans than philosophers and boy lovers. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful romantic, and I retroactively or proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show. We've got a whole lot of farce to witness this week. I mean, the farce kept coming quick all week. I mean, even yesterday, William sent me a story about a former reporter who was arrested for child pornography and potentially worse. And supposedly, and I never could find information on this, maybe William can help me out here. Potentially, he was someone who claimed to have debunked the Pizzagate conspiracy, which, if true, if he did claim to debunk it, that kind of opens up a whole lot of, was this guy trying to distract us so we weren't looking for actual pedophiles? I don't know. That's just the tip of the iceberg for farce this week. We also have, perhaps, the most farcical thing we've ever covered on this show before. I say that, of course, because remember, way back in the day, for those midsiders who have been here for a long time, where Elliot gave us the story, he submitted the story about the teen who tried to kill his mother for taking away his phone, and he said that was peak farce, and that's where we came up with, there'll never be peak farce. Well, again, this story we have this week shows that there will never be peak farce. And the question is, where is it going to escalate from for here? Because you'll see when we talk about this one how absurd it is. But first, I have to bring in my co-host. From the beautiful beach, which really isn't all that beautiful, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yes, I'm in the beach of Hermosa. Gonna go to Yellow Card tonight in Inglewood. It's my last thing down here in Southern California on the calendar for quite some time, possibly the rest of time. We shall see. So looking forward to the rest of time. Looking forward to that. It's very strange being back here. I've normally been gone a couple weeks, but the contrast is evident, as it always has been. I've already run into many a homeless person, as you can imagine.
Isn't that crazy? Like, you leave Southern California for 2 weeks, and it's so obvious how bad it is by contrast.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Not going to say there's no homeless people in Northern California, but man, oh man, it's different down here.
But no, there's homeless people everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the UFC fights last night. It was pretty good. Had a good time. But wow. Just trying to catch up on all the farce this week has been a full-time job, Justin. Like, usually I have to dig deep to find farce that we haven't seen before, but it was just coming out everywhere today, or this week.
Yeah, no, thank God this happened before I went back to school, because in the next couple of weeks I have to go back to school. And it is like, dude, when I'm, especially I've committed this year to being at the kids club more often, because I kind of feel like they're being neglected by everybody. And to have success in the long run, you need to have kids be connected with the high school team from the time they're young. So especially with that, it's really hard to be plugged into the farce. I mean, that's part of the reason. If you remember back in the day, James left the show because he didn't want to be so involved with the political side, because he thought we were all about politics. We've never been all about politics, and I have a similar perspective to James. Part of the reason I moved to Florida and I coach and I teach is so I don't have to be involved with this all the time. Because if this is all I looked at in life, William, if this farce was all you looked at in life, wouldn't you think the world was falling apart?
You'd be so pessimistic. Yeah, you'd be so pessimistic. You know, the saying touch grass comes to mind, right? It's like, yeah, you'll go outside of the cesspools that are modern culture, and there's so much more to gain than what's online and what's on the streets of Dale's Lawn and Hermosa Beach out here.
Well, even the people who talk about stuff in real life, like I read the Walt Disney World subreddit, and those people are all super unhappy. I mean, with the release of the Haunted Mansion movie this week, they announced the Hatbox Ghost from the Disneyland Haunted Mansion is going to be in the Disney World Haunted Mansion. And rather than be excited, be like, hey, that's cool, we get this thing, they're all complaining about where it's going to be placed in the Haunted Mansion. So that's an example right there of there's a good thing that you can go and you literally see it from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to what we were saying about you being away for 2 weeks from LA and you're back and you have a completely different perspective on it. And that's what the Midside is all about. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, the getting that perspective is kind of what it's all about. I know for a lot of our listeners, this is get their way to get their perspective of what's going on in out in Farce Land. So let's show them all the farce that we have this week.
Yep. Let's head into Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. As always, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. That's themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. We accept any and all support, including, and perhaps most of all, affirmations. And only one time has anyone ever taken me up on that affirmations thing. So, all right, first, I want to talk about some science fiction, William, and emphasis on the word fiction, according to you, right? There was a testimony in front of the House Oversight Subcommittee this week about unidentified aerial phenomena. Why, first of all, why did we change it from UFO to UAP?
I think it's because UFO implies aliens, but now UAP implies aliens, as we shall see.
Right. Now, I think they'd probably say object implies aliens because it implies someone's flying it, whereas they're saying any of these things they see, these UFOs they see, could be some other phenomena like the light or something, right? Because don't they try and say that sometimes? Like, it's just the way people saw the light in a specific way?
Yeah, yeah. Or in the case of that jet, birds flying at different altitudes than the plane.
Anyway, a former Air Force intelligence officer, retired Major David Grush, gave his testimony. And in his testimony, he claims there are such things as UAPs and the government is covering them up. Here's a quote here. He said, I was informed in the course of my official duties of a multi-decade UAP crash retrieval and reverse engineering program to which I was denied access. This, of course, William, hits home with pop punk because did you see Tom DeLonge this week taking a victory lap? Because he took all that time away from Blink 182. He's literally saying, we changed the world. Dude, you already changed the world with Blink 182. You don't need to change it again with this. So, William, you said this is science fiction. Why do you say this is fiction? And what is this guy's motivation for making this up?
Well, I don't think, I don't know that it's necessarily, we need to have a motivation. We have narcissism, and it's a perfectly valid explanation. Look at all the attention this guy's getting. Putting that aside, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And to quote a famous physics YouTuber, it's never aliens, right?
What about that guy on the History Channel, though?
Well, then it's always aliens, right? Hey, I am not someone who thinks that there's no possibility of extraterrestrial life. That's not the position I take. But all of these claims could be easily verified by evidence, but no evidence is being provided, right? That's the part that gets me. It's like, point at something real. all we've seen is, well, over the course of my duties, I've seen X, or I've been told X. It's not even I've seen X, right? Or I talked to somebody who said that they saw something. The government cannot keep secrets at all, right?
Yeah.
Think of all
that's the South Park episode. That's the South Park episode. Remember the South Park episode about 9/11? And basically the whole point of it was when Bush comes out at the end, he's like, it's only the most intricate conspiracy ever, right? Because if the 9/11 conspiracy was true that the U.S. government did it, think of all the people who would have had to be involved with covering it up. And it's the same thing here, right? Based on what you're saying, isn't it more likely somebody was fucking with this guy? And what I mean by that is they're like, get a load of Grush. I'm going to tell them that we have a secret UFO we're not telling anyone about and watch what happens. And now, 40 years later or whatever, I don't know how long ago this was, right? He said it was, did he say what year? No, he didn't say what year. But he says multi-decade.
There is such a thing as disinformation, right?
Right.
Right, Justin? So like this could be purposeful disinformation as well. And
I'm saying it's purposeful disinformation just to make this guy look like an ass. And one of his coworkers from 40 years ago, 30 years ago is laughing right now.
It could be true. It could be true. I think the other possibility is kind of less conspiratorial because we know the government's done it before, planting stories in order to distract from things. Now, I'm not saying this is a particular instance of that, but maybe he fell victim to one of those. We know in the past, the CIA has talked about posting UFO stories to cover up the news cycle for other stories. Okay. So like, this has been done historically. So, I don't know. Isn't aliens the modern day angels? I mean, we have some things that are fascinating and not explained. You know, there was the whole stuff that happened in Vegas, right? That stuff is interesting, but I just keep falling back on it's never aliens, right? We always find other explanations. Now, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that someday we will meet our alien overlords. Maybe it's Lur from Omicron Persei 8, but you know, I just don't buy it. And it's so weird that we're so fascinated with this that people are claiming victory here when nothing has been said, nothing has been presented, no data, no evidence, nothing.
Well, hasn't that always been the thing about alien and UFO conspiracy theorists, that they always claim victory over? I mean, that's every conspiracy theorist in general, I feel like.
Yeah.
Whenever there's any sort of new piece of evidence, they always take it as the mic drop, even if it's not.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've got some low-level, like, think of how many majors there are in the Air Force in intelligence, like, probably tens of thousands, if not more. So you have one person coming out and presenting a bunch of hearsay at best, and I don't know. Think of all the money wasted on this so far. Your tax dollars at work, I guess.
I would rather them waste the money on this, though. I mean, at least they're not really accomplishing anything. That's the example of a logjam, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Keep Congress busy with this.
Yeah. But again, this is why I think that they're just somebody was just fucking with this guy. That's what I think happened.
Okay.
I think they knew he's the kind of guy who would run with this, and they just told him this shit. And I don't think they expected it to go this far. Or maybe somebody's a hero. Let's write that story. Somebody who uses disinformation to fuck with the government to make them waste their time. That'd be a cool story, wouldn't it? Somebody write that story.
All right.
All right, moving on to more disinformation or confirmation bias or cluster B and narcissism. William, did you see this independently of me sharing it? Because I had this shared with me. This isn't even something I found on my own on Reddit. There was a Reddit thread, and it's just the main post, circulating on Twitter. It has 3.3 million views on Twitter. Did you see this independently, William?
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter. Yeah.
I think this is a perfect example.
X.com. I saw it on X.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, I've been very confused because I use the app, but sometimes when people send me a link like this, I click on it. The app still has the bird and still says Twitter, but if you go to the website and you're not logged in, it says X as the logo. And it's very confusing for someone who has no idea what's going on because they're disconnected. I read something briefly that Musk is trying to transition into something or something.
Yeah, Musk is transitioning Twitter to X. And he put this gigantic X sign, super bright X sign, on the building in San Francisco. And now it's trying to get as much attention as possible, of course. And in typical B.T. Barnum fashion, now the San Francisco has fallen for it. They're going to sue him to take the sign down, which is only going to generate more news. Things are going good with the rebranding so far.
Sue him based on what grounds?
The light is too bright.
So it's causing damage to the public?
To the homeless people. Yeah. The homeless people that live on the streets down there, I'm sure. I don't know. There's a building across the street. I don't know if it's residential or office, but...
Okay. And two sentences or less, can you explain to me what the difference between X and Twitter is?
Elon wants X to be an everything app. So everything from payments, shopping, basically like Instagram, but on steroids, right? You know, you can one click.
Didn't he already get rid of PayPal though?
Yeah. That's how he got fired from PayPal. That's basically is because he wanted PayPal to morph into a bank and all sorts of other things, right? That was his vision.
So he's going back to his grassroots. This is Elon Musk's grassroots movement is X.
Yep.
All right. Well, that helped us find this thread from Reddit, right? Which I think, William, this thread is a perfect example of the kids and how they're exposed to ideas that they have no idea about. And when you talk about floating abstractions, how the internet creates floating abstractions for these kids with no world experience. We'll see this come up again in our major farce of this week, our quote unquote peak farce this week. But this also is sort of like a good little lead in here, right? How do I changes? That this person meant change my family's views on communism. Here's the post. So my family was born in Poland, moved to US in 1994, and lived under Stalin, and no doubt about it, they were poor. Although I understand that communism is better than capitalism and I believe it is superior, how could I explain to my family and convince them that capitalism is exploitative and we need a better system? I have tried using facts to change them, but they all say we had nothing under communism, now we have everything. Now, William, before we address the farce here, do you think this is actually real? Because I've seen some people say this is a satire post. I think that this is real. What do you think?
Woke or joke? This is so tough. I mean, I'm leaning towards joke because, even though it does say, how do I changes, the rest are sentences with capitalization. And I just don't see a communist using capitalization. That's just the minor fact that pushes it over towards joke, but it could easily be. I mean, it's like 51-49, Justin.
So the reason I think it's woke, it's real, is because of the use of the word exploitative, because this is the ultimate word that all the young kids use nowadays as their Trump word to make communism better than capitalism. The only argument he uses
communism
in here,
is non-exploitative? How does that even work?
Yes, that's their argument. Well, do you need me to actually make the argument, or are you being...
No, what is their logic to say that it's not exploitative?
So exploitation under communism is defined as the value that the distributor makes on it, on the product, over the value of the laborer's work, right? Because under communism... It's
only the
labor
counts.
Theory of it.
Yeah.
Right. Only the labor counts. So if it costs you 50 cents to make something, right, I'm just throwing this out, right? They would rather measure in labor hours, right? So let's say hours. It takes you 5 hours to make something, but it's sold for 10 hours. You've been exploited for 5 hours because the distributor got an extra 5 hours out of it that you did not put in. So they took advantage of you. They exploited you. That's their definition. Whereas under communism, as we know, someone decides, presumably the group decides, who deserves what. And people are paid based on their need. So you're not exploited. You're given what you need to survive. And you do the work, I suppose, for the love of the work, they would likely argue. right? And this is their ultimate trump card, which is why I think that this is legitimate, because that's the example of the floating abstraction there. The idea that, oh, capitalism is exploitative, right? And then, you know, if you reply to them and you say, oh, well, it's a contract. They agree to that. They agree you're going to pay me $10 and then you could sell the product for whatever you want. So I made the product for $10, but, you know, you're selling those shoes for $300. Well, I haven't been exploited for $290 because that's the contract I made. But they would say that, oh, well, the system is set up in a way that you have to work. And because you have to work, you're forced into a contract that you really wouldn't want to be in because you have to choose between survival or being exploited. And of course, dying or being exploited. Of course, you're going to choose being exploited. And this is the logic they all use. See how these aren't really even communist arguments at this point. These are teenage arguments. And that's the way I see this. This reads to me like a teenager who is rebelling against his parents or her parents. I don't want to assume gender here. And has no other way of arguing except going online and looking to be reinforced by other people who are going to tell them, oh, the reality in front of your face is false. Here's how to evade reality.
The amount of evasion you have to do, though, right? Like, it's explicitly in the examples. Like, well, like, look at the parent's answer giving back a concrete, right? Like blowing up the floating abstraction. And it's like the kid doesn't even accept it as an argument.
Well, right. But that's why I'm saying it's easier when you're a kid to have floating abstractions and to evade, and it's more dangerous. I think we're seeing a perfect example of how the internet and social media is dangerous for young kids who are developing their brains. Because what do you have much less of, William, at this age? You have much less of a concrete experience with the world. Mm. You're very, very limited. You're necessarily sheltered. Now, yes, I know there are outliers, and I know it's a spectrum. Yes, of how much you're sheltered or not, but necessarily you're sheltered, especially in relation to parents who move from Poland. Wouldn't they be much more experienced? But it's a lot easier to disregard that experience if to you it's not real, because is the experience real from the kid's perspective? No, it's not.
No, I guess it's all hearsay to him, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, in a way, isn't everything they're taught in school a floating abstraction?
Yeah, and I think all history is taught disconnected from the individual.
Right. Now, it was different for me growing up. William, did you take field trips or anything when you were growing up? When I was growing up, I lived in New England. We could go and see Lexington and Concord. We could see Bunker Hill, right? We could do the Freedom Trail. We had colonial villages we could go to, right? Sturbridge Village, where we go and there were people reenacting what it was like to live at the time. We had that advantage.
We had the Henry Ford Museum and the Sloan Kettering Museum, like places where they're showing the Industrial Revolution and the car revolution, right, in Michigan. And then there's another village, I can't remember, that was more of a turn of century train sort of village. And yeah, they had the same thing. They had reenactments, they had things going on that you could see, activities to do. You could see what life was like.
Right. And how much of an advantage is that, being able to see that? I don't know how you manage it with public school, because I went to private school, but there has to be a way to look at what's available locally and bring kids to it. I mean, not that I'm advocating bringing public school kids to Disney World specifically, but have you been on the Carousel of Progress here, William?
No, I haven't seen that.
So the Carousel of Progress was a show that Walt Disney made for the World's Fair.
What was the one in the ball?
Oh, that's another one. Couple. That's Spaceship Earth.
That's the one I was thinking. That's another Spaceship Earth. Thank you.
Right. So the Carousel of Progress is, there's shows in the middle, animatronics, that show how technology developed over the 20th century, and the audience rotates around it in a carousel. So each, they watch a show, and then they move to the next one. They watch a show and then they move to the next one, like a carousel. That would be a really important thing to see, because two things. One, that is a concrete example of something great that was created and in American history and became a draw and helped build a theme park around. I mean, that's living history right there. And then it also is a record of history. Same thing with Spaceship Earth. I mean, Spaceship Earth has, it's all about you go inside of it, and it's all about how communication technology has improved throughout history. So again, living animatronics about it, about all of these things. One of the scenes is the Sistine Chapel, and Michelangelo painting the Sistine Chapel. And now I see that, and I've been to the Sistine Chapel. And I will say it changes going to the Sistine Chapel. And what I mean by that is you go there and you're like, oh, this place actually is real. That's cool. But being able to see it makes it a lot less impactful going, because you've already seen a recreation of it. So there has to be a way to combat this kind of floating abstractions that these kids are doing online. William, is this just an issue of we need to find a way, and I'm not advocating government, but I'm going to use the word regulate, of regulating kids' internet time and time online? I mean, this is touch grass, is it not?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can read and learn about some of this stuff online as well in a
that's true,
non-abstract way. So I think it's more of we start in the education system at such a young age, just refusing to teach kids to think, right? Like hampering their critical thinking. And so I don't see how you can't end up with this kind of unclear thinking at the end.
Right. So you're not taught to think about how humans actually interact with each other and how it's a trade-based relationship. You're just told the way it is, and you just memorize things. So you just memorize facts. And when you're told things like this, well, you don't question what exploitation really means and what the production and distribution.
I mean, you're not even taught history of Europe. That's too white.
Okay, well, that's a different discussion. And that was another bit of farce we didn't get into with Florida this week. Did you see all the stuff? And I'm not going to go into this, but we'll use this to transition here. Did you see all the stuff about people upset about the new Black history standards in Florida?
Yeah, the ones that are the same as the old ones. Like nothing's changed.
Yeah, and that they were written by a committee which included several Black members.
Yeah, they apparently are racist.
Yeah, look, I'm not... I think it's poorly written when it says, like, the slavery benefited some people. Like, rhetorically, I think that's a dumb move. But there is an old argument that needs to be taught, right? The idea that people who owned slaves and advocated for slavery believed in the idea that it was essential cradle-to-grave welfare and that it was giving these people skills. Like, that's an important thing that needs to be taught.
Because the parallels to today's welfare are striking. Once you understand that fact, that's why this reaction is coming.
Right. And contextually, it did accidentally help some people, but every tragedy in the history of the world has accidentally benefited some people. Right. So that was a nice little bit of farce there that makes us question, right? Who benefits from what, and what are the accidental outcomes of government policies? And that's another great bit of farce this week. I don't know what you thought of when you saw this, William, but I had two thoughts when I saw this. So apparently a family of eight people, and I don't know all the relations here. I don't know if this is an immediate family or right. I don't really care too much about the details here, because if you know the basics of this, it's really, really interesting. A family member of eight people in California went to Arizona, collected a bunch of cans, and redeemed them in California for a total of, and I don't know how many years they were doing this for, but a total of $7.6 million. Now, they're being accused of fraud. The reason they're being accused of fraud is, I don't know how many people out there live in a state with CRV or can redemption. And what that is in California, and it was in Massachusetts where I grew up as well. My parents used to, when I was young, send me to the grocery store once I had a license, right? This is the thing. Kids get licenses nowadays to do whatever they want. When I got a license, my parents were like, oh, great, now you can do stuff we don't want to do. They would have all these cans stacked in the garage, and I would bring it to a machine that you would put in one can at a time, and then they would tell you how much money you got back. Because
that was how it was in Michigan. How is it in California? I've never understood how you're supposed to return cans in California. I've lived here almost 10 years now.
Well, that's a scam on top of it, right? It's by weight. So California, so anyone out there, a lot of states will charge you a tax per can you buy. So every can you buy, it's an extra 5 cents that goes to the government.
10 cents in Michigan.
Okay, I was speaking hypothetically, right? We could say it's doop-de-doo, an extra doop-de-doo, right? Okay. That's why it's the machine in California, not in California. That's why it's the machine in Michigan and Massachusetts. Yeah. You get charged for a can, you put a can in, you get your nickel back, right? This is how we remember, right? Is that the song name? In California, it's by weight, dude. You go to a back of a grocery store parking lot. There's a guy there in like a shipping container, and he has a scale. And he has a Rubbermaid trash bin. And you put all of your cans in the trash bin. He weighs it, and then he prints out a sticker for you. He prints out a label for you, a receipt for you, and you go inside the grocery store and they redeem you. How do you know that they're being fair? I don't think they're being fair. I think they're paying out less than they're taking in. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that adds to the complexity of the story, because this is fraud. This is fraud because they're taking cans that were not bought in California. So those cans were not taxed by California. And then they're redeeming them and they're taking money from California. Now, this is taking money that doesn't exist. Does that make sense, William?
Well, they're considering the number of cans that me and millions of other Californians just throw away because the recycling program doesn't make any sense. Yes, I understand. But
right. Well, and that's
there's millions of dollars wasted on this, right?
Correct. And that's where the rub is here. That's where the rub is here. Because this whole program is an example of government-enforced ideology and... not even that. Government taking advantage of ideology, environmentalism, in order to make themselves money because they know people aren't going to be able to figure out the program and people are going to be too lazy. Because who wants to go to the back of a parking lot where it smells, right? Because nobody's washing their cans out. So think of how bad it is and how dirty it is back there to get less money than they donated to the government by buying soda. If you really were against it that much, you'd do what I would do and just stop buying cans, right? Which is ultimately what the environmentalists want. But is it really immoral what these people are doing? It's technically immoral because of the sense that they didn't buy the cans in California that they're redeeming. But on the other hand, like you said, there's so much waste. At least the money's going back to someone. And is it really immoral to defraud the government over a fraudulent tax, essentially? Isn't it that's taxation without representation, is it not?
I see what you're saying. Like, this is I think this would be a good Breaking Bad light TV movie. I could see A24 doing this, Justin. The family the family that defrauds the government over millions of dollars over their fraudulent recycling program.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, Breaking Bad is very much like this guy is evil. If you actually wanted to do a show that was compelling about moral grayness, this would be a perfect premise for it. I don't think A24 could do it because I think that they would make these people seem bad. Oh, okay.
Just making sure. A joke.
But, I mean, couldn't you see Apple TV doing this well?
Yeah.
I don't know. Let us, Midsiders, let us know what you think in the Discord, because I don't have an easy answer for this. Because, technically, this is illegal. Technically, they're taking money that they didn't put into the system. But on the other hand, government is necessarily immoral. And as William pointed out, there's so much waste. So there's a good argument either way here about whether this is moral or not. I think ultimately, probably, William, it's immoral, because if you have that much of a problem with the system, leave California. Right? But then on the other hand, but see, people try this. Don't people try this where homeless people go around and gather cans?
Yeah. In Dale's Lawn, there was an old lady who would drive all the dogs in the neighborhood crazy, because Thursday night or Friday morning, she would come around and dig through everyone's blue bins to pull out all the cans.
Right. What's really another sort of interesting angle here before we move on to another immoral state in the state of Florida. And we're talking about how immoral California is, but apparently Florida is really immoral. The last thing I'll say about this is what's incredible here is if this family really was able to get $7.6 million with this scheme, why is there not essentially a company set up? And maybe homeless people do this and we just don't know it, right? Maybe there's a homeless network sort of like in John Wick. Maybe this is how Lawrence Fishburne's character in John Wick makes
money.
Maybe
this is how, Justin, we might have figured out how all the homeless people can afford so much drugs, because that's something that I've never figured out.
Right. Maybe they have this organ. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe this is big homeless cracking down on this family.
Oh, man.
This family.
Conspiracy. Right. The aliens are causing the homeless to collect all the cans for the money.
But doesn't it seem like if you could get $7.6 million over a certain number of years, and again, I don't know how many years, you could invest enough infrastructure that it's worth it and you're making a profit off of doing this, legally within the state, collecting the cans that everyone's throwing away?
If some random family is doing this, Justin, do you think that organized crime is not doing this?
Okay, well, there you go. So you even went a step further. So,
yeah.
All right, we'll talk about some random family. William, I would, I don't even know what to say, okay? Because I was, again, sent this clip on X of a CNN segment, which I can only describe as pure propaganda. And the person who said it to me said, 100,000 people leave California in a year. Nobody says anything. One family leaves Florida and they make a 3-minute segment and release it on the internet.
This is part of the anti-DeSantis, propaganda. Like, here's the thing. I want to dive into it, but I want us to keep this in mind. DeSantis has a terrible campaign. And what I mean by that is they're just doing a terrible job, okay?
Yes.
The best campaign for DeSantis is
this video,
what the mainstream media is doing in general, and this video in specific is basically should be, if we could cut this down to 30 seconds and put it out as a campaign ad, I think DeSantis would win.
Yeah, you're right. He should let them sit back and destroy themselves. The problem is he's so afraid of Trump that he's trying to out-Trump Trump, right? That's a big issue with it. It's the I think that if DeSantis does not destroy himself in the primary, he can win the general election easily, because he can just let Biden, presumably Biden, maybe Kamala Harris, or Gavin Newsom, seems to think it's him, destroy themselves. But the problem is so much damage going to be done to DeSantis in the primary that he'll be too damaged at the general election. We'll see.
Yep.
This video, I was tracking California versus Florida before even DeSantis, but there's the DeSantis comment in here. But this video is about a family who's fleeing Florida. We'll talk about that in a second, right? What I want to do with this video is we have the full, 3.5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
This is soundbite after soundbite of propaganda. And what I want to do is pause it after certain areas and point out how absurd it is and how farcical it is. Because not often, William, do we find things where the farce is this thick. And what I mean by that is even look at all the stories we've had so far today, right? We had the Gray story about the Cannes redemption, where the farce is kind of in the middle here. We had the Reddit post where it's kind of one-dimensional, and we had the UFO story where it's not really easy to see the farce there. Whereas here, it's really a sort of good way to build up from the ground. And what I mean by that is, here you can get on the ground floor and see what farce looks like and how to identify it, and then use those skills to identify the element of farce elsewhere that exist. So what I would like to do, William, is play a segment, and you've got all the quotes up, correct? After you hear somebody say the quote that I have listed here, pause it, and then we'll talk about it briefly, and then we'll move on like that. That sound good?
All right, sounds good. Let's give it a try.
We just thought it would be a nice, warm place to live where we could get to beaches.
I just never thought that I would have to flee a state for the good of my children.
Okay, William, why are they fleeing? Yeah. Are home prices too high? Are they afraid of hurricanes? Was their local Walgreens robbed three times during a CNN segment? Or is one of their kids trans? Which one do you think it is?
I'm guessing it's the beach had too many sharks, because the opening shot is the beach and showing.
Oh, you've added in something else here.
I had to add my own choice.
Well, what was that movie? Was it the Transformers movie, or was it? No, it was Godzilla versus. No, what was it? Yeah, it was Godzilla versus Kong that started in Florida, right? And the Florida coast was destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you're saying? Yeah. You're going with the Godzilla versus Kong theory? Yeah, okay. Well, number three, I will tell you, actually was the story, another farce story you sent in that wasn't used this week. During a CNN segment in San Francisco, the Walgreens was robbed three times. So during the recording of the segment. So the answer here is that one of their kids is trans. That's the reason they're fleeing the state. Continue.
254, this will permanent outlaw the mutilation of minors.
I remember Tori coming to me one time and in tears, which she doesn't normally do. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said DeSantis. And like the fact that a governor would be making my kid cry, that's a messed up government.
Wait, is the governor doing home visits now that I'm not aware of? Like, did he show up to this kid's house and he's like, "You're not really a girl," and then the kid started crying? Is that what's going on?
Not to get all dark, but the Pulse nightclub shooting didn't make her cry. I mean,
when
seriously,
was the Pulse? How many years ago was that?
That wasn't that many years ago, was it?
I don't know.
Well, this kid is 17. We know we were talking about this pre-show. This kid, quote unquote, is 17. Then she would have still been alive. It's been before
June 2016, so 7 years. Yeah. So the kid was 10 years old.
Okay. Well, she was probably already trans by then, right? Considering the history of this family.
No, that's not what it says. It says she said, we'll find this out later, or he said, 11 or 12. That quote will be in here later.
All right.
But isn't this what you're saying? What is wrong with the parents here that the kid is crying over something the governor's saying that that's affecting the kid more than actual things that are happening?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, words are violence, Justin.
Right. And here's another question. Is that how we measure a government? So
yes,
a government
by the number of children that the we measure it by the milliliters of tears issued forth by the blessed children that are trans.
That the governor causes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, any form of government. I mean, those recyclers that, the recycling people that are that allowed the defrauding to happen, those probably cause some amount of trans tears. So, and that's how we know how much to punish them.
Right. So
it's a scientific measure.
Right. And remember the meme where it used to be like people would catch the tears of like men or whatever. And
So
now we have two jars. Now we have two jars, right? We have the jars of the bad people and the jars of the good people. the tears of the good people. And if the tears of the good people is very, very big, that's how we know if there's a lot of moisture in that, a lot of tears in that jar. That's how we know the government is messed up.
Yeah.
We're absolutely moving because of the political climate and the laws in Florida. We didn't want to move. When the Florida Board of Medicine started meeting and we realized that they were going to ban gender-affirming care for our kids, that we might need to leave because that is life-saving, essential medicine and treatment for our daughter.
William, how many anti-reality concepts and phrases were in that statement?
Well, first we have the most insidious. We have to start with the most insidious, which is the whole concept of castrate your child or they will commit suicide, right? This guilt trip that is used to bludgeon parents that don't want to comply with transgender ideology. Yeah.
Life saving and essential.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're right. So, that's completely insane. It's the idea of, and you know, I'll touch on this a little bit later, right? Because they talk about suicide, but it's the idea of the only way to save your kid is to put them on puberty blockers and cut their bodies.
Yeah. To mutilate and castrate them. Yeah. That's the only way. Yeah.
So that's one. And what are the other?
I think that this anti-concept, we've gone full circle just in the last 20 years. Between, if you remember, back in the day, we had people who were going to pray the gay away, treat the gay away, electroshock the gay away, right?
Yep.
These were stories in the 90s that people rejected, rightfully so. They said, hey, this is not something you can get rid of, right? And now we've come full circle where we're calling gender-affirming care the same sort of torture. We're going to torture your body into submission, right?
Right.
And,
right, so it's the idea of whatever is going on in your mind is more important than what's going on in your body. So we're affirming the gender in your mind, not the gender in your body. And we're calling that gender affirming.
Yeah, it's a mind-body dichotomy. And it's also refusing to see the refusal to search for underlying causes, right?
Right.
Any search for an underlying psychological cause for this must be evil. And it must be, you're not affirming the gender. You're trying to pray the trans away is the argument they would make.
Right.
But there is a fundamental difference between gender dysphoria and homosexuality. We get back to the thing we've talked about before, which is forced teaming. We've been forced to group together the LGB and the T.
Yes.
And that's why those of you on Discord have seen, I put 0% queer. I've changed my name from Discord Overlord Edgelord to 0% queer in honor of this quote right here.
All right. And then, of course, the last anti-reality phrase or concept here is calling the son a daughter. Calling the son or daughter.
Yeah.
And I think...
I paused it. I know you can't see this, Justin, but I just paused it on the quote-unquote daughter sitting, and that is a gay man with long hair.
I agree.
I paused the video and it's just like, that is an effeminate gay man with long hair.
And I think the visuals speak a lot. And again, there's some stuff later on in this 3 minutes that the visuals are very strong with as well. I think you make a really good point about the visuals there. But I also think the audio in this next clip, when this young man speaks, and, you know, I would get attacked for this, right? And possibly canceled for saying this. But I think the audio also shows how this is not really a daughter. So continue.
Here we go.
I was very relieved when we decided to leave. I had never really heard that much about
Stop it.
This is the voice of people who take hormone blockers. You hear this with F to M and M to F. They become distorted in a particular way. And I don't mean to sound cruel, but it is grating. The voice is grating. It's the wrong register. Does that make any sense, Justin?
Yeah, you know who else it happens with? People who take too many steroids. Have you ever seen a female bodybuilder who takes too many steroids and her voice changes? It has the similar sort of gratingness to it because it's sort of the uncanny valley. And I think a way we can start looking at people who are transitioning or who have transitioning is the uncanny valley. The uncanny valley is, of course, when graphics become so good that they're obviously not real anymore and people look at it and there's something disconcerting about it. And we need to stop shaming people for that feeling of disconcertingness here, whereas listening to this person and looking at this person is disconcerting, not because I am afraid of the person, but I am afraid for the person. I am afraid for this young man about how he is being damaged physically and psychologically, because not only is he on all of these hormone blockers and everything, but they are now fleeing the state and having that decision to flee the state reinforced by the media. That's incredibly damaging. Yeah. And that's what when I hear the voice and I look at this person, that is what I think. And that is what I feel. And I'm supposed to feel shame for that.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
About trans people. And until I was like 11 or 12, I didn't even know trans people existed. So I was just used to being uncomfortable.
Okay, so William, he is 17 now. So let me get this straight. He's heard about trans for about 5 or 6 years, decided he's trans, and now his entire family has to uproot their lives because he's decided that what he learned about, which is a fad essentially, is what they have to live based on. Isn't this literally, so remember when I asked in the Reddit post if this was real, if it was woke or joke? This is the real life version of the Reddit post. This is why I believe the Reddit post is real. This is the same thing. He read about some floating abstraction online or heard about it, whatever the fad is. And I say it's a fad because if you remember, if you've been listening to the show, didn't I call it on the show, William, where I said they're going to start pushing the trans stuff hard? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I called that. I saw this coming down the pipeline. He is a perfect example. He's in that prime age where they're taking advantage of him, where he's being psychologically damaged, and now his entire family's quality of life.
He's being groomed.
Yes. Correct. Because that's the other thing.
This poor guy, like, I am not particularly effeminate, right? There are gays who are effeminate. And growing up uncomfortably pre-puberty is a very common story for the more effeminate gay men. They are destroying gay men. This person should, in a positive culture, have grown up as an effeminate gay man. And this is exactly what I have talked about in the past and gotten in trouble for talking about in the past, is that when we talk about trans genocide, this is a gay genocide, right? You're removing this person from the gay population, right? And they're no longer going to be functioning sexually. It's taking whatever away from this person by, let's be honest, they're not 18 yet. This is not by their choice.
Well, William, this goes back to what you just said a few minutes ago about how this is the same thing as pray the gay away. The same people who would do gay conversion therapy or argue for it would seem to be, I would think,
arguing for
in
this
favor
kind
of
trans conversion therapy. Yeah.
Right. Because it's the idea that, oh, they're not actually gay. They're just, you know, they're messed up in the head and actually believe they're a different gender. Do you see that? That's kind of crazy. Yeah. And the other thing here is, right, I think this is obscuring what is going on with a teenager. All teenagers are uncomfortable with who they are. I don't care if they look super comfortable or not. You are adapting to a new way of thinking. You're adapting to a changing body. It is uncomfortable for every human being. I mean, Adam Carolla has talked about how it's uncomfortable for men through the 20s because they have no sense of purpose and no direction and no sense of belonging. And we see how it's uncomfortable for women.
And that age is getting later and later for men. And Justin, I think it's important to also point out that we, in even in Florida, which this is evidence of, we have destroyed the concept of masculinity to such an extent that even an effeminate person will reject any shred of masculinity, right? In this case, right? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, that because our concept of masculinity and belonging for and understanding male bonds and what it means to be a man is so denigrated in today's society, this kid would rather mutilate themselves than come to terms with being a unique individual man and all the things that that entails.
Yeah, right? That goes with that goes with the next part. So play the next part and then pause it at herself, and then we'll talk about exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I started hormone blockers pretty soon after that.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there was times before she started getting hormones and stuff that she was suicidal, but after she transitioned, she was much more outgoing, much more like comfortable with herself.
Okay, so what you were just saying was about masculinity being destroyed, right? Well, yeah. I think CNN is accidentally undermining itself here with the video. Now, people, I would encourage you to go watch this, Midsiders, anyone listening. You can't see it right now, so you're going to have to test what we're saying by looking at it yourself. But look at the family around the table, and look at the father and the other son at the U-Haul box moving. Do these people look healthy? Did this father and son look like a image of masculinity? Would you want to be a man if this is what you were around all the time? Would you have a healthy outlook on life if this is what you were around all the time?
Yeah, it's sad. And there's another thing going on here too. That's another insidious thing. How many people right at puberty there feel like their changes of their body is out of their control. And then to offer them,
what is that?
Well, here's a way we can, well, hold on. But that's a feeling. That's a valid feeling, right?
It is a valid feeling because it's true. It's a true feeling.
Yeah. But the desire to bring it back under control by using puberty blockers, or what we should correctly call sterilization drugs, for using sterilization drugs to bring that back under your control. You see what I mean, Justin? Like, it's like,
well, yeah.
you're offering to someone who's clearly suffering psychological trauma for whatever reason. Okay. This is not judging and I'm not diagnosing. I'm saying that it's clear this person is suffering from psychological trauma, psychological issues, and you're giving them a false, I'm going to claim, lever of control and say, look, you can control your body. Isn't that great? It's a distraction from the psychological issue.
Right.
And all you're doing is it's a false lever of control because all you're doing is destroying your body.
Right. And I will psychologicalize a little bit here, right? Psychologize here a little bit. I said it that way on purpose to be funny. And this goes down to self-esteem. And now let's talk about what you were talking about, not being able to be in control of your body, because this is something we all deal with, men or women. And let's talk about size for a second here. William, think about how much the way other people perceive you for both men and women, size plays into it, right?
Yeah.
We could talk about weight. We could talk about height. We could talk about genitals, right? You know, both female breasts and the male penis, right?
And male breasts.
I don't want to know what you guys are into.
Okay? And the female penis.
The things just got a little bit weird here.
Hey,
I did not gender those things. I was just saying, right?
Oh, okay.
No, all of these things you have no control over, right? You have no control over, you know, how tall you get. You have no control over what size your breasts grow to. You have no control over what size your penis grows to. All of
or
these
when
things
your balls things, drop. Think of all the late bloomers back at junior high, right?
I will admit to being one of those, right? I have an experience where some girl was calling me puberty boy and trying to act like she was attracted to me at the same time, which was very strange, especially looking back on
that's
that.
Awkward.
It's like, were you a pedophile back then? Like, what's going on? But that's the point, right? What if somebody was like, oh, well, we can help you with that, right? We can help you with that. And they preyed on that. Instead, what should they have taught me? To psychologize here, this is where it's really important to teach teenagers self-esteem. dude, the number one thing I talk to students about and wrestlers about when they come to me about stuff is just, it's okay. It's normal. How are you going to deal with this? What are you going to do to make sure it's what you want? You can't get upset with yourself about this. We can't control this. It's just the way it is, right? Even if it's just the way other people are acting towards them. Well, we can't control other people. That's how other people act. That doesn't say anything about you. That says it about other people, right? That's something that Tom Brady talks about all the time, right? What other people say is not a say about you is not a reflection of you. It's a reflection of them. But the self-esteem thing is why I'm saying this imagery of the family around the table who are all overweight and do not dress well.
Yeah.
This shows you that none of them have self-esteem. And then this goes all the way to the greater issue where the dad uses the word suicidal. Right? She was suicidal. He was suicidal. William, is there any teenager in the world who's never had a suicidal thought? I always want to know this, especially because don't adults at certain points have suicidal thoughts too? I mean, I know me personally. Go ahead. Hold on. Let me finish real quick.
Go ahead.
I just want to say I have some days where I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to end this because I don't want to deal with this anymore, right? I don't really think that. It just happens sometimes. And then there are other days where it's just like I have this existential dread, you know, a midlife crisis, the idea that, shit, one day I'm not going to exist anymore. What the fuck? What if I have a heart attack? Right? Like, those thoughts can exist and you can be healthy. We have a spectrum of thoughts, do we not, William?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is rather than dealing with reality on reality's terms, we're teaching that that reality doesn't exist, basically, right? Instead of saying like, hey, these are normal parts of your development, we're saying you are special and giving them that pseudo self-esteem of you're special. You have these levers that other people don't have. You're chosen. You're of the chosen religion. You're the chosen gender. You are trans.
You're so special. We're going to do all these things for you, including medical care. And all of us, the other three members of the family, are going to leave the state. Not to raise a point here, William, but the brother is going to be pretty fucked up psychologically, isn't he? The one that's not addressed in this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine moving. Like, who knows how old the brother is, right? I don't know that that's said in the story. But imagine this one child getting all of the attention.
Yes.
And you're literally moving for this one child.
Yes.
Like, are you saying this guy, this other son has no friends, would not like to finish his school with his friends, graduate with his friends?
Right. And his desires don't matter. Like, what about him feeling uncomfortable? And what about all the things he wants? Does anybody ever ask him?
Plot twist. He's an incel. He doesn't matter.
All right, let's continue.
Okay, careful.
Seeing many families that are leaving. I really think if you were to ask a member of a trans family, they would tell you they go to bed at night dreaming of how to get out of the state.
So first of all, because it was shocking to me, you could hear how much trouble they were having moving. Could you hear the two men?
Oh, man.
But what are you going to say?
Justin, I have a challenge for you. How would you leave the state of Florida? Rather than dream about it, what's the best way for you to just leave the state of Florida? I mean, what is it, about 4 hours, five
hours?
I
would call CNN, and have them do a segment on me to leave Florida is what I would do.
Florida is not like an island in the Pacific, right? Or something like that. Like the lost city of Atlanta in Futurama. Is it deep in the Atlantic Ocean?
Goes back to the communist argument, though. This goes back to the social justice argument. It's the idea that people are so poorly off economically that they can't move. But for me, if it was that much of a danger of my life, I would just walk if I had to. Right. If it's a matter of survival to leave, I would just drop all my stuff and walk. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I'm confused. Like what? Justin, I could leave California right now if I wanted to. Right. Like I would have to make decisions. Right. It's not like there's no physical barrier to me leaving California. There are places that people live that there are physical barriers to leave. Right. Why are we pretending that Florida is somehow North
Korea? Like North Korea?
Yeah. what are we doing?
Well, it's propaganda. That's why. You pointed out half of the propaganda here, right? The use of the word dreaming. The other half of the propaganda here is, William, she said, like, there are families with trans family members that they dream of how to get out of the state. Exactly how many families in Florida have trans family members?
Probably millions, right? We've been isn't the trans population like 30% or something, you know? What's that? That's another Adam Carollaism, right? Didn't he ask his sister once, like, well, how many gay people do you think there are? And she was like, oh, like 40% or something, because she was like doing hair in West Hollywood. So she thought there's like 40% of gay people everywhere.
Right. And that's the thing here is the other part of the propaganda is the dreaming is making it seem like how bad of conditions people are living in that they can't leave. But then they're also trying to make it seem like there are many, many more people who are suffering in this way than there actually are. We've already blown up the premise that they're suffering. Why they're suffering. We admit they're suffering. We acknowledge they're suffering. We're saying why, and we're saying it's not different than anyone else. Or it's not different in any way that needs to be responded to in the way that this video is pushing, right? And we're also saying that there's not as many people who are suffering in this way that this video is saying and that this activist is claiming. They always want to make it seem like there's many, many more people. And it's we've been saying, by jokingly saying social justice is backing in individualism, it's getting to be smaller and smaller numbers of people, smaller and smaller populations that they're defending here. And they make it seem like it's a lot
worse. Isn't it their white privilege that they're moving?
Yep.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, that's the dining room right here. And then this is the living room.
My hope for the McKee family is they are able to find a community that embraces them.
So it's not about the quality of your life, or the quality of your life is defined by your community embracing you. Isn't this second-handed, William?
I'm waiting for the community of Roanoke Park to embrace me. If they don't embrace me in the first, I don't know, month of me living up there, I think I should move, right, Chester? And what does embrace look like? Is it like a hug?
I don't know. I don't know, because that's the thing. Like, I'm very involved with the community here, right? Because I'm involved with sports. I'm involved with a very popular sport here. But you think the entire community embraces me?
I imagine lots of hugs. Yep. That's definitely something I can see happening to you, Justin. Just constant hugs, constant embraces.
I mean, there are a lot of hugs, but not for the reason you think. It's because wrestling is a physical and emotionally intense sport. So when someone needs comfort or celebration, sometimes there's a hug involved. However, we're saying embrace, what we mean by is, like, am I going out in Kissimmee and everyone knows who I am? Yes, exactly. And does everyone know who I am? No, it's because I'm pursuing my values and doing things I enjoy.
They don't embrace your straightness?
No, that's
you
the
laugh,
other thing.
But that's when, hold on. I think that's more than a joke here. They don't embrace your straightness? Well, because if we're talking about embracing a sexuality, which is what they try to make transgender out to be, what does that even mean in the community, right? Embracing it, this gets back to the thing we've talked about before, which, the gay activists have turned from leave us the hell alone to you must worship us. And this is an example of exactly that again.
Right. Well, play forward to, we don't even have to play the next one. Just go forward to, it's not a safe environment for queer people in general. Play that part.
We're lucky that we're able to get out. We're able to afford to leave. A lot of people can't, or it's going to be very difficult.
I feel really bad for the people that have to stay here. It's been difficult to access my hormones. I'm not honestly sure how I would continue to access care. Even if I wasn't trans, I wouldn't be comfortable here. It's just not a safe environment for queer people in general.
So, William, this is what you were just saying.
Good. I don't want it to be a safe environment for queer people. I think queer people, and what I mean, I don't mean physically safe. I mean safe from ridicule. I think all queer should be ridiculed. It is a political ideology worthy of ridicule.
But where's the ridicule, William? Like, okay, you've already talked about the physical thing, right? It's physically safe here for people, right? This isn't the Middle East. Oh, yeah. There aren't queer people being stoned, right? So Psychologically, how is this not safe for them? Like, I live in Kissimmee.
Yeah.
I don't see people going around talking about trans people. I saw at the Germany Pavilion in Epcot a couple weeks ago, a man in a woman's dress. My argument was, if you want to wear a dress, that's fine. Why not wear one that fits your body? Why are you wearing a women's dress?
Justin, are you sure it wasn't Lederhosen?
Yes, but funny. Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well done. So how is it not safe? Because I think you've pointed out something that I didn't even have the answer to. So I appreciate that. You're claiming it's only safe for them if they're celebrated, correct?
If not celebrated, worshipped. Worshipped. They must be the center. Their narcissistic black hole must be filled. And it can't be filled, so they're never going to be safe anywhere. But that, if they are not worshipped, if their every whim is not immediately saw to, if their psychological quote-unquote needs are not filled constantly, then they are not safe. And it's true in a sense, because they don't have a self, right? A true narcissist does not have a self.
Yeah.
They're afraid of what they see when they look inward. And right. So because of that, they fill that black hole with everyone else's thoughts of them. And so if they're not being worshipped, and even when they are, they're not going to be safe. They aren't safe.
And that's why this is dangerous for teenagers, especially when you're coupling it with ideas of heteronormativity and the patriarchy, because this is something men try to reply with all the time, where men are like, well, we're never complimented. No one ever tells us, like, they find us attractive or they like us or they appreciate us. And that, you know, the extremists reply, the social justice people reply and say, oh, well, you're just trying to act oppressed when you're not. When the point of saying that is to share the male perspective, because these people, like the young man in this video, are taught that, oh, well, men are worshipped. When they're not.
Yeah. They create a false view. I know we're taking the...
But let's take the heteronormative approach here.
I know we're taking that approach, but we don't have to, Justin. We had that example of the trans female to male talking about how tough it was being, once they started being treated like a man, how tough it was,
yes.
Right? They weren't getting the female psychological needs. And she not only that, like, remember, she vacillated between the female psychological needs and the male psychological needs, right? Like, males need...
Yes.
I think we discount the amount of value males get, especially young males, we're talking about teenage and preteens, from horseplay, physical contact, physical sports. There's a reason why those kinds of that kind of bonding is different than with females, right? In general. Again, in general, we're talking about generals here. And yes. The psychological needs of being part of a team and being recognized for your achievement, right? And usually a very physical achievement, even if it's like something like creating a nice, piece of art or like woodworking thing or fixing something, right? Those are all usually physical things. And, you know, which would, I think in general, a male would be way less interested in being complimented just on how he looks versus maybe if he works out on his muscles, right? We see this with like bodybuilders, right? Like most guys notice other guys, gains in the gym, right? Like that's something that other guys will compliment other guys on, and not even in a gay way, right? Same thing with physical things like, oh, wow, you worked on the shed and it looks really nice, right? Or you fix the gutters. Like these are things that are more typically male for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the tough things about all these gym memes where it's like, you know, women don't want men to look at them in the gym and stuff. Honestly, sometimes there's women in the gym who you can tell work out a lot, and you just want to be like, hey, good job, keep working hard. But you don't want them to get mad at you for objectifying them or for hitting on them.
Well, and that would be, and hold on, even me as a gay man, if I said something like that to another man, do you think they would think I was hitting on them?
Like, no. Like, that's the thing, like, if there's a girl sitting there doing squats, right? You see her rip out like 10 squats, right? And then you look and you're like, hey, you got a nice butt. Like, it's because they're on the squat machine. You know what I mean? Like, of course, when you're doing squats, I'm going to look at your butt. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference between someone's walking into the gym and you say something like that. Context matters, right? And I think that's the whole thing with all of this. I think, again, this is so dangerous for teenagers because you're developing a sense of context as a teenager. And what I mean by that is, think of how we've talked about before, William, how in the 80s, they did the whole alpha beta thing in movies and how the alpha jocks were evil and the beta nerds were good. It's because there's this idea that popular people in high school are bad people. This is the idea that the media in Hollywood has created. Because, oh, they're all happy and they don't have the lack of comfort and they don't feel like they belong. They feel all those things as well. The real reason people are nicer to popular people is because those people just tend to be on the surface level. And I'm not saying below the surface they're not mean, because we know there are plenty of examples of, you know, the manipulative or mean-spirited popular person. But on the surface, they are very benevolent. They're very easy to get along with. We see this example in Mean Girls, right? Where I always remember Regina George looking at Katie's bracelet and saying, oh my God, that's such a cute bracelet. Where did you get it? And then she goes to her friends and says, oh, that's the ugliest effing bracelet I've ever seen. But doesn't everyone want to be around someone who compliments their bracelets and things like that? But we hear these stories of, the good-looking people, the nice people, the popular people. Oh, they're all bad people. They're oppressive. That's their privilege. Well, yeah, it's privilege. It's privilege for people who are better and more successful in reality, people want to be around, that people enjoy positivity. And then that gets so twisted now that people need to change their own bodies to be more like it's. Here's something crazy, William. I'm going to say something. There is more in common with an incel and with a trans person who goes through gender-affirming care than anyone cares to admit. It is the same mentality. It's the mentality that other people are privileged because of the way people are drawn to them and reality favors them. And I am not favored in that way. So I need to make changes to myself physically to be more in line with so reality will favor me. It's a mystical universe worldview that the universe it favors people, where the universe is ambivalent. The universe does not have feelings.
You are 100% correct.
All right,
I do fear for my daughter's safety and just the fact that somebody might want to hurt her just for her being her, for her existence is scary. I worry about her every time she goes out.
Doesn't every mother do this, William? Like, I've never met a parent. Like, I coach girls. I've never met a parent who doesn't worry about the kids. Part of my job as a coach is to balance how much is legitimate of what the parents are saying and how much is the way a parent is, and maternal instinct especially. Isn't this the stereotype of especially the Jewish mother of being overbearing in this way?
Yeah. And I love the argument about just for her existing. I worry about because people don't like her just because she exists. Justin, I think that's the most obvious projection that I've ever seen.
Think of narcissism, like,
yeah. Well, and also just the psychological projection of, like, they hate businessmen for just existing, right? They hate conservatives for just existing. Like, all these things, like, they hate all of their opponents. Anyone who doesn't worship them, they hate for just existing, right? They can't go do their own thing, right? They must worship me, right? That is their view. Anyone who doesn't worship them, they hate them for existing, because how do you exist without worshiping me? Right? What is your purpose?
Just to make it about me for a second, William, whenever a conversation like this is had or I see people like this, it always reminds me how I'm not a narcissist. Because every once in a while, people love to throw that term around and be like, oh, you're a narcissist, blah, blah, blah. But I see something like this, and my biggest thing that I've always had to deal with, and I've heard Adam Carolla say it too, is it's always been hard for me to accept in life that nobody else really gives a shit about me. The person who cares about me the most is me, and nobody else really cares.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And isn't that a Bayside song?
Yes.
Objectivist on fire. Yeah.
Objectivist on fire. Correct. Right. Exactly. 100%. The the only one who cares for me is me, right? And William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct. So think about how narcissistic this is to think that your people care about your mere existence.
Yeah. Yeah. The only reason I care about this, poor 17-year-old lad's existence is because of their pain being used for political propaganda. That's the only reason I care. Right.
Yes.
Otherwise, right. I would have no idea about this person and their pain. And just to jump back, like something else just popped in my head. They were talking about how they can't get their drugs. Justin, I know I didn't post it because it's like not a real story, but there's a national shortage. We're pumping out so many of these sterilization drugs that there's a national shortage. So I don't know how moving to another state is going to help this person get more of the sterilization drugs, but I don't think it's going to help.
Right. And to be clear, I don't really think government should be blocking anyone from getting any kind of medicine they want. So,
well, we certainly should be blocking parents from giving sterilization drugs to children. Like that I can see. That's child abuse, Justin. I can see that. And if that's what the law is about, then yes. I'm for it.
Yes. That argument makes sense. If government's legitimate purpose is to stop child abuse, then yes. That's a whole different argument, though, right? About because anarchists would even argue with that, right? That government should even get involved with that relationship. So, but if government's legitimate purpose is to stop child abuse, then yes, stop gender affirming care and sterilization drugs in the teen years, right? You could even argue in the teen years, no one is mentally competent. Even if you are an emancipated minor, you're not competent to take the drugs. But my point is, of all the points they've raised in this video, the most legitimate point is government blocking medicines from people. That's where the most debate can be had.
Yep. But we have to worry about it, Justin, because they said access. So yes. That usually means they want the government to pay for it, and they're not.
That is certainly something that we can take a stance against, is the idea that even if government shouldn't block people for the medicines, government should certainly not be paying for medicines for people.
Yeah, this is not a cheap treatment, that's for sure. But let's continue.
Almost the wide open view.
Yeah, sunsets are great from here.
No. I'm looking forward to just being in a place where I don't feel under attack, where I don't feel oppressed. It's just so sad that our country and our society are in this place of denigrating people like that and making them feel like they have no place.
William, who is
Justin,
telling them
what
this?
Have we done? What have we done to conservatives over the last like 15 years? What have we done to people who feel like the Second Amendment is a real right, or people who mistakenly think the election was stolen?
Look, it's not the last 15 years. It's not the last. I want a little history lesson here, William. Rush Limbaugh, okay? I know we're not allowed to talk about him and talk about how great he was, right? And, you know, problems with drug addiction aside, right, because he had issues with pain pill addiction, and I don't know anything about his marriage and stuff. But if you listened to his radio show and you saw the effect he had, is Rush Limbaugh was one of the first people who talked about how since the left took over the media and the education system in the 60s, it became that conservatives were made to feel like they did not have a place, right? This whole idea of the mainstream media being left wing. You think this happened overnight? You think this happened in the last 15 years, in the last 5 years? That has been happening for a long, long time. And Rush Limbaugh was one of the lone voices against that for a long time. So you're right that it's been happening to the other side for a large amount of time. But one of the things about that is the reason it wasn't ever as big of a deal as it is now, because the country wasn't as narcissistic and thus as second-handed as it was then. So even though the media would give a more left-hand perspective, people who weren't that way would just go about their business and living their lives. They didn't need acceptance from other people. Now they do. And that's what I mean when I say, who's telling them this? No one is directly telling them they have no place, but they just want to feel like, as you said, they're worshipped all the time, right?
Right, right. And but we do tell men that they have no place, right? And in yes. California, men have no place on a board of directors. We need half women. Men don't belong. You can't have men-only spaces, right? That men don't have, you know, men don't belong. We have to allow women into every male space. Straight men, especially cis straight men, just don't belong. Their time is over. They've oppressed for too long, and now it's time to punish them for I don't know, 10 generations. Is that traditional punishment?
Well, this is all the Barbie movie that you're talking about, and we'll get into that in a second. Yeah. But let's finish up this video.
It's just hard to start over all over again.
All right, stop. I think that quote sums up so much. How would he know how hard it is to start over? This video was taken at the beginning of him
moving,
right?
And then the suicide prevention screen is the last thing. We have to mention that because it's a visual thing.
Well, they do that on MTV too. Like whenever they have like an episode of Catfish where the trans person is the catfish, they always like do stuff like that because they want to make it seem like they're not taking advantage of these people, even though they are. Right? CNN is completely using these people for propaganda, but they put the thing at the end to make it seem like they're not. But I just think it's funny, although you could argue he's had to start all over again as a girl, right? But it's funny that this person is claiming to know things that he doesn't know. Oh, it's hard to start all over again. No, you mean it's hard to go through the process you're going through right now. You haven't actually started all over again. You're just thinking about it. It's hypothetical to you. It shows how hypothetical this kid is.
Yeah. Oh, man. Exhausting. This farce is exhausting.
It is, and that was a lot of farce. So let's exhaust ourselves further by talking about the Barbie movie in The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. Just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link, and in there you'll see the join code for the Discord. Tell us what you think about the fleeing Florida video from CNN. Look at some trailers that I usually post in there on Saturdays, or share some farce with us. There's so much farce right now. You can help contribute to producing The Midside. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, I saw Barbie the day after I saw Oppenheimer. And this
what?
Week
Whiplash.
I saw...
Whiplash. Whiplash.
Yes. And not the good movie Whiplash. Like, he means actual Whiplash. I saw Haunted Mansion this week. For the sake of time, I'm not going to review Haunted Mansion on the show. If you want to know my review of Haunted Mansion, you can go on Letterboxd, look up The Midside, and see my one-sentence review, where I ranked it for the year, how many stars I gave it. And if you want to ask me about it, go ahead and ask me in the Discord what I thought. But Barbie is the much more interesting movie to talk about, because you would have thought this week there'd be a lot of people in theaters dressed like the Haunted Mansion, especially in Disney Springs. There was more people dressed in pink, and it's mainly gay men and women. There's a lot more teen and preteen girls this week, though, dressed in heels and in pink. And this has kind of become, William, from my perspective, this has kind of become more than a movie at this point. It's kind of become a cultural meme, and I worry about how influential this movie is going to be going forward. I mean, what have you seen? Like, do you think that this has kind of been blown out of proportion in the sense that it's like a thing people are doing to fit in now and get attention?
I think it's going to be a short-lived fad. I don't think this is going to have any staying power. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I think that it's fashionable right now, and it will pass. I don't think we're going to see a lot of Barbie sales going up. I don't think there's going to, I mean, there'll probably be a Barbie 2 or Barbie 3, of course, but I think the cultural impact is being blown out of proportion, but I think it is a cultural barometer. I think this is an equivalent of some bad 70s cultural movie, right? That nobody watches anymore. That's just like takes you back to the 70s, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I will say that the production value in this movie is excellent, right? The art design, right? I mean, not that they didn't have plenty to pull from artistically, right? But the design of Barbie Land, the costuming is all great. The acting by Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling is excellent. So I can't, in good conscience, give this an absolutely terrible rating, right? I can't give this one star. I can't give this a no bro. This has to just be like a solid, like, you know, what did I say? What are the rankings? Or just no? Right. So I can't give, sorry, I apologize. My lowest ranking is just no, is one star. I can't give this a just no because there are some redeeming qualities. Therefore, I give it a no bro, which is two stars, the second lowest ranking, because of what you're saying. This is largely forgettable because it is so steeped in a lot of the things we've already been talking about today that on this episode, that whatever is worthwhile in this movie is lost. So I'm going to talk about a few things and go in depth because I think it, if you haven't seen the movie, there's a few things that need to be talked about in depth. First, my one sentence review. While Barbie's ultimate point about being human is important, its journey there is equal parts nonsensical, underdeveloped, and insulting to men and to women. In a parenthetical I put at the end here, and especially to fans of Zack Snyder. And we'll get to that last. But I want to talk about the first thing I talked about is this idea of the ending point here and how this is insulting to men and to women and how the ending point about being human is actually worthwhile. So what I want to read first is, have you heard about this speech by America Ferrera's character about how hard it is to be a woman? So
is that which Barbie is she?
She's not a Barbie. So I should probably say the basic premise of the movie. Okay. Barbie, there's crossover between Barbie and her owner. And so Barbie has to go to the real world. Barbie is stereotypical Barbie. So in Barbie Land, there's a whole bunch of different Barbies, writer Barbie and stereotypical Barbie and blah, blah, blah.
Weirdo Barbie.
Right. Weirdo Barbie, right? Played by Kate McKinnon, right? Well, Weirdo Barbie is weird because she was destroyed by, as kids do, right? Cut the hair, drew on her face, messed with her clothing. As kids do, when she was played with, she became weird, right? Well, stereotypical Barbie played by Margot Robbie, is starting to have like thoughts of death and things like that. So she has to go to the real world to find her owner to help her out so she can fix her life. She goes to the real world. Ryan Gosling goes with her. He's her Ken. He's in love with her, and she just ignores him. And America Ferrera, her owner, comes back with her to try and help her. And in the real world, she's explaining to all the Barbies what it's like to be a woman. And this is her speech. I'm going to read the speech. It's not that long, but people are applauding this speech as amazing. And William, I want you to think about what I said earlier about how everyone's uncomfortable as a teen and everyone has suicidal thoughts and everyone, you know, thinks the grass is greener on the other side. And I want you to think of this while I'm reading this speech. It is literally impossible to be a woman. You are so beautiful and so smart and it kills me that you don't think you're good enough. Like we have to always be extraordinary, but somehow we're always doing it wrong. You have to be thin, but not too thin. And you can never say you want to be thin. You have to say you want to be healthy, but also you have to be thin. You have to have money, but you can't ask for money because that's crass. You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas. You're supposed to love being a mother, but don't talk about your kids all the damn time. You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people. You have to answer for men's bad behavior, which is insane, but if you point that out, you're accused of complaining. You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women because you're supposed to be part of the sisterhood. But always stand out and always be grateful, but never forget that the system is rigged, so find a way to acknowledge that, but also always be grateful. You have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. It's too contradictory, and nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. I'm just so tired of watching myself and every single other woman tie herself into knots so that people will like us. And if all of that is also true for a doll just representing women, then I don't even know. Well, this is my thing. It's also true for a doll just representing women and you don't know. You don't know because you don't want to acknowledge the fact that this is the human experience. And I don't mean it's the singular human experience, because I think this is a very negative and cynical way of looking at the human experience. I think this is a way of looking at the human experience that is second-handed and lacks self-esteem. But this is the human experience. If you're trying to satisfy all people at all times, this is what you will feel. If you want everyone to like you, this is what you will feel. When I was young, I used to call it impossible standards. I said everybody has impossible standards. Because if you please one person, well, then another person who is a different person with different ideas and different values will not be pleased. You can't please people all the time.
Justin, isn't this speech inadvertently, because I don't think they intended it, inadvertently showing a immature female psychology? And what I mean by that is, in general, the female psychology is very much around belonging, right? And community. And the more mature version of that is that is recognizing that I want to be a person that I'm proud of, and I want to surround myself by people who recognize that goodness that I built, right? Like, that's a more mature, I would say more mature view of sort of female psychology. You know, for men, it's more, you know, I want to achieve greatness, quote unquote, right? Like, that's the immature feeling, right? I want to be a hero, right? I want to, you know, this is the male sort of thing. But then as you mature, you recognize that to be bold and heroic in your life, right? You could, again, it gets back into building the person of moral character, taking that kind of moral pride internally is a little more, you know, a more mature version of that male pride. Like, look at what I can achieve in the world, right?
So,
look at what people will recognize me for in the world, right?
A My Chemical Romance quote from their album, the Killjoys, where he says, everybody wants to save the world, but nobody wants to die. That's sort of the immature male perspective, is the idea that, you know, you can be this hero and there are no negative effects. Whereas what you're saying, the male, for the healthy male version of it is, I'm going to pursue my value and find something that I'd be willing to die for, because without life, it's meaningless.
Yep.
No, I agree with you. And that's part of the problem with this movie, is it's so all over the place. It's so all over the place that the ultimate point is obscured. Now, I don't want to go too into the movie. I'm only going to tell you things that I need to tell you in order to make the points I'm going to make, right? So the basic premise of this movie is they spend about 5 to 10 minutes in the real world. Ken learns about the patriarchy, and he comes back to Barbie Land, and he puts the patriarchy forward. Now, he ends up doing this because the Barbies don't love him, right? He wants Barbie to love him. She doesn't love him. He even in the movie, like, admits, right, that he loves her and he wants her attention, and she's basically like, oh, we can only be friends. And by the way, he doesn't have any genitalia, so they've kind of made all the Kens in the movie into incels. That's interesting. But one of the bad writing things here is all the Barbies have to be woken up. All the Barbies have to be woken up. And when they wake them up, what they do is manipulate the Kens. And it's just like, you're justifying your main characters doing what they're doing, and they're being manipulative and mean. I think part of it is they're trying to flip it. And if they make the males feel a certain way, this is my benevolent interpretation, if they make the males feel a certain way about how the males are oppressed in Barbie Land, maybe they'll realize that the women are oppressed in the real world, because essentially the Kens are being objectified in Barbie Land. Do you get what I'm saying? They're not being acknowledged for who they are. They just, the attention the Barbies get from them is what they enjoy, and that's all they enjoy. See how the Kens have been objectified?
Yeah.
And I say that because at the end of the movie, Barbie has a conversation, Margot Robbie, with the creator of Barbie, Ruth Handler. And
there's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
Yes. And there's two quotes here which are wonderful. And if the movie had been built around this, it would have been good. So the first thing is, Barbie says, "I want to be part of the people that make meaning, not the thing that's made. I want to do the imagining. I don't want to be the idea. Does that make sense?" Now, William, this is partially complaining about women being objectified, right? She's saying she's an object. She doesn't want to be an object anymore. She doesn't want to be an idea. She wants to be a person. Because at the end of the movie, yeah, Barbie wants to become human. And she's doing the Pinocchio thing, asking her creator if she can be a real boy. Again, why that wasn't the entire movie? Barbie tries to become a real person. Wouldn't that have been an interesting movie in itself? In the end, that they put that in at the end of the movie. Instead, they make this about the patriarchy coming to Barbie land. This would have been much better, right? Barbie tries to become a real person. Like Pinocchio, Barbie as Pinocchio would have been an interesting movie. But beyond that, there's a very real thing here, right? People want to create. They don't want to be created. This goes back to what we're saying about freedom, anti-government, right? Communism, fascism, collectivism. They want to create the collective, and they want to create who people are to make them fit the collective, right? Go back to Man of Steel, where every person was genetically, socially engineered in order to fill a specific role in society. Those people are the objects. They are not themselves. And in Man of Steel, Clark Kent, Kal-El, was the first natural birth in centuries and eons. He was the first person who had the element of choice. That's essentially what Barbie's saying here. Do you see the point I'm building towards here, William? There is a point here about humanity that everyone shares, that we didn't have to divide the genders. Here's the final quote that's really, really important. She's asking, you know, she goes, can she asks Ruth, Handler, she goes, "Can I be human now?" And Ruth's like, "You don't have to ask me that." And so she says, Barbie says, "So being human is not something I need to ask for or even want. I can just, it's something I just discover that I am." And William, this goes to what you were saying about the juvenile perspective of this movie. Now, you can understand why Barbie as Pinocchio would be a character that's a teenager. But this is the teen experience, isn't it? That you don't have to ask to be human. You don't have to fit all these impossible standards. You just realize you're human. That's what you do when you're a teenager. You discover who you are. You discover that you're human. This is why we're saying it was insidious about all the gender-affirming care and the fleeing Florida with the family. They're not letting the kid discover who the kid is.
Yeah.
So this, do you see how this is a powerful point, but it's been buried in this movie?
Yeah, I see that.
Okay, now to finish off this review, people are probably wondering, what do I mean insulting to Zack Snyder fans? So I'll be clear, and William, had you heard that there's a Zack Snyder joke in this movie before I said it?
No.
Okay, I had heard that already, because obviously I'm plugged in. I didn't know what the exact joke was. I thought it would be just a small aside. And I was actually so shocked in the theater that I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, so when we've already established in this episode that I'm not a narcissist, correct? Would you call me a narcissist?
No.
Okay. I have never felt more personally targeted by a movie, to the point that one of my wrestlers said she saw the movie and she asked me if I saw it. And she said when her and her stepmom saw it, they thought the movie was coming for me, that they thought I would be upset with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens is all these Barbies, when Ken comes back and brings the patriarchy, the Barbies are brainwashed. And Margot Robbie and America Ferrera and Weird Barbie have to unbrainwash all of them. And America Ferrera's teen kid who calls Barbie a fascist. They all have to. Yeah, I threw that in there because it's, think about that for a second.
I've seen that in the previews. It's hilarious.
They have to
not in an intended way.
Right. It's intended that they're like, call. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But they have to unbrainwash all these Barbies. And obviously, after these Barbies are unbrainwashed, they have a reaction. Okay. So they get Ryder Barbie, W-R-I-T-E-R, and they get her away from her Ken, and they unbrainwash her. Now remember, she's been brainwashed by the patriarchy, and this is what she says when she wakes up. It's like I've been in a dream where I was really invested in the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. Any reaction, William?
I'm not sure where they're trying to go with it, but it sounds like they're just trying to insult any real male that actually takes their girlfriend or wife to see this movie.
Well, that's the point, right? I went to this movie because my wife wanted to see it, right? And then you're going to sit there and insult me. So I'm being supportive, right? And I get insulted. And I think it's pretty insidious in the fact that have we never talked about before about the role of men and women in Zack Snyder's movies and the statements he makes on masculinity and femininity and how his characters are all very masculine?
He's the only major Hollywood director really dealing with those issues, right?
And it deals with it in a healthy way, right? Where, I mean, think about the relationship between Martha and Clark in Batman versus Superman. And, I mean, in Man of Steel, in that scene of, you know, focus on my voice, make the world smaller. But, you know, where she teaches him all about, like, you know, be their hero or be none of it. You know, it's up to you. Right? I mean, he shows this, right? He shows, Zack Snyder shows real masculinity. And he's not proud. He's not ashamed of showing it. He's very proud of showing it. Right. And so I found, though, because I wanted the word for word quote, I found it in a Mashable article. And just to show you what the intern said about it, the intern who was writing about this, her name was Yasmin Hamada. She said Hamade. So I don't think she's Japanese. I think she's like Middle Eastern. She said, I scoffed. I screamed. I couldn't believe Warner Brothers actually greenlit their own roast. Snyder Bros everywhere. This one's for you. So that shows you the female reaction to it and what they're taking from it.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Even the term Snyder.
Perfectly healthy, right? Perfectly healthy.
Right. Right. So there's been.
Not divisive at all.
Right. There's been a couple statements here by the director that are being used to defend what she's saying. Because let's sidestep the issue that. Remember when I said that what went on with Zack Snyder and the Snyder Cut was much more than just WB internal politics.
Yeah.
This kind of proves it, right? WB let this in one of their own movies when they wouldn't give Zack Snyder creative control, but they gave Greta Gerwig creative control to the point that they let her make fun of one of their own movies and one of their own former directors for these issues. Yeah. Come on, man. There's more going on here. So she said, I never put anything in a movie I don't love, and that's true. I don't really have use for things that I don't have affection for within a movie. That was the core of it. So that was the core of the movie, is what she's saying. So this one article by the Digital Fix is claiming, well, that means she loves the Snyder Cut. Do you buy that rationalization by the left?
No, I don't buy that at all.
All right. Now, here's what she said when she was asked directly about it. Because I don't have a dog in this fight, I didn't even really know. I knew it was a thing. I don't know the contours of all the ins and outs, but it's the kind of thing that I vaguely know. But I think that was the thing, and that it was like if writer Barbie had vague knowledge of, and then all of a sudden in a certain state, it really meant a lot to her, and then it went away. So, William, what is she saying here without directly saying it? Check my premises here. Is she saying that when she was in a certain state, as in masculinity, it meant a lot to her, and then it went away when she didn't have that certain state of masculinity because she wasn't brainwashed by the patriarchy anymore, but she had vague knowledge of it. Isn't that the way most women think of the Snyder Cut now? Isn't that what she's presupposing here?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that makes sense.
Isn't she basically making fun of something that she claims she doesn't really know anything about? So,
yeah,
we want to talk about dogs.
She's basically, hold on. She's saying the irrelevant, that's irrelevant argument. Isn't that just the that's irrelevant or you're irrelevant argument?
Right. And she's that's the point. She's trying to minimize something that she's making an avatar for masculinity. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
Something that she doesn't even really know anything about. Do you see how insidious this is? And how hateful this is?
Yeah. I'm going to make a movie about masculinity and femininity and not know anything about masculinity.
Right. And then belittle or minimize something that means a lot to a lot of people and dismiss their movement as simply an example of toxic masculinity. Is that not being what's being done here?
Yep. Well, we know that Zack Snyder exemplifies toxic masculinity to a lot of feminists. So,
right. Just think of Sucker Punch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's everything I took away from the Barbie movie. So now you don't have to take it away. Share my thoughts. That was narcissism there.
Do that
share
too.
Share my thoughts. Ooh. You should really care about the Snyder Cut and not know why. No, share your thoughts about the Snyder Cut joke. Am I overreacting? I want to know what you midsiders think. But, I mean, the fact that I felt that targeted and then other people... William, that's the big thing for me to finish up here. Isn't it a big deal that, like, one of my wrestlers and her stepmom, when they watched the movie, thought of me and thought that I was being attacked?
Yeah, that's funny.
I mean, that says something, doesn't
it? You're being targeted. You're being targeted by Hollywood.
But if they thought that, that means it's not just in my head, correct?
Right, yeah.
Now, it's a big joke to them, and I have healthy enough self-esteem that I don't really feel personally attacked besides that moment. But the point I'm making with all of this, William, and I hope it's understood and I hope you understand it, is that this is showing you the way culture is shaped and the way propaganda is put forward.
Yes, and that reaction was the intent of the director, right? Like, we laughed at other parts that we weren't supposed to laugh at that we just described, but this part was intentionally made to feel truly make a truly masculine man with self-esteem feel slighted, right? That was the intent.
Right, because they were trying to do to me what they did to Ken in the movie. I mean, dude, there was another point where in the movie where Ryan Gosling's Ken, like, very much reminded me of Johnny Lawrence from Cobra Kai, and I mean the new series. And remember how that show's a lot about reclaiming masculinity, especially the first season of that show. And as I was watching it, I was like, I kind of want to like him. And then I went, well, no, if I do that, then I'm just playing into their hands, right? And then I went, ah, fuck, there's going to be people on the internet who claim to be alpha males who are going to celebrate this and say he's the true hero. And then what happened? Haven't you seen tweets of saying Ryan Gosling's Ken is the real hero of Barbie?
Yeah, some of them are joking, but some of them mean it. Yeah.
Right. And that's playing right into the hands of this movie. And that's the thing is, like, don't feel slighted by this. Like, yeah, it's very jarring. It's very jarring. Like, I mean, I'm like Adam Carolla, man. Like, even though we got the Snyder Cut released, it disappeared so quickly that I was like, yeah, this doesn't matter. Nobody cares about this. This is such a blip on the radar that... And I don't think it's the best movie of the year. I think Oppenheimer is, and I think that's the biggest. But I mean biggest as far as financial and cultural buzz. That the Snyder Cut movement and Zack Snyder is mentioned in the biggest movie of the year, it's kind of jarring at first. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. The Snyder Cut has had an impact, a lasting impact on Hollywood. That's the only conclusion you can draw.
But to me, that's weird. Like, I don't see it that way. This is what I'm saying about, like, the Adam Carolla in me. Like, I'm just like, eh, whatever. Like, my favorite director got his cut released. I can move on with my life. I'm not that important. He's not that important. You know I mean, he's making movies on Netflix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like Tom Brady's retired now. Whenever anyone, like, takes a shot at Tom Brady, I'm like, why? He's retired. It's the same sort of mentality. I don't know. Maybe it's a lack of a healthy self-esteem on my part. All right, let's talk about some movies that are going to come out. We got a bunch of trailers this week. We got a bunch of them that are docuseries. So let's head into that in Trailer Takedown.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Depp versus Heard is a Netflix docuseries about the Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard trial. I thought it was really interesting how this started out with seeming like a pro-Depp trailer, and then... the way they cut the trailer is sort of undermined that and asked valid questions about PR versus justice and social media culture. So I actually think this is one of those things that I would turn on. And if I found myself interested, I would keep watching. But there have been several of these Netflix docuseries, William, that I started watching and was very interested in. And then as I got through it, I lost interest and just never finished. So this is something that the trailer is enough and the, you know, topic is enough that I want to give this a chance because it seems interesting. But I worry that I wouldn't be able to stay hooked. But we'll see what happens, because I have, like, I watched the Tinder Swindler, and I watched the one about, I don't know if you remember, in the scene, Is Anyone Up, about the revenge porn where people would leak nudes of their exes who broke up with them, and that was very big in the Warped Tour scene. They did one about that guy as well, Is Anyone Up, and I watched all that, so I could get all the way through this. So this is the definition of a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, I'm not so social media addicted that I care that much about this. I only really cared about the media's reaction in general, right? And then how we swung, like no one remembers how we swung from, well, it's obviously Amber Heard's the victim, to, wait a minute, there's something else going on. And Justin, I'm a little suspicious about how the Netflix trailer is cut, because
I agree.
It's sort of rewriting reality to say that, oh, well, everybody was on Johnny Depp's side. That is not how this started, right? So I am way more skeptical. So this is definitely a tackle for me.
Tackle.
And I will say, William, that can you play the way to step on it, William? Play it.
No. Hold on. I got to switch screens when I do this.
Play it.
A little different. I refuse.
I felt so vindicated for a moment.
Step on it, William.
There you go. Vindicated. No, I agree with what you're saying, and that's part of the reason I may give up on it. You know what I mean? If they rewrite reality so much that
pretending like everyone didn't immediately jump on Amber Heard's side.
Right.
I don't know.
Second trailer.
Demons and Saviors is a Hulu docuseries about, I don't even know what the fuck this is about. All right, like the first three quarters of this, they were like ghosts and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, they were like, this woman did not murder her kid and she's been in jail for 6 years or whatever. And I was like, well, I care about that second part. That seems like it could be kind of interesting. But then at the end, they were like, and the reason she's in jail is she claims to talk to ghosts. And I'm like, so a mentally ill person killed her daughter and isn't claiming she killed her daughter? I don't understand what the story is here and why anyone even made this docuseries. Maybe it's just the example or case of a really bad trailer, but no, tackle.
Ugh, tackle.
Yeah, this looks like... are we trying to do an Innocence Project on someone who believes in demons and it claims that a haunting killed their child? I don't know. This seems like this is so weird, right? Like, it's just so weird. It's like, is it Unsolved Mysteries? Is this like Ghost Hunter plus Unsolved Mysteries plus like a real true crime documentary? I don't know. This just seems so weird. Tackle?
Third trailer.
Wanted, the escape of Carlos Goss, I don't know how to say his name, is Apple TV's latest docuseries. And this is about the former CEO of Nissan, who is apparently still on the run, they made it seem like. I don't know. It's very interesting, William, to watch these three in a row, right? Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV. Yeah. Because you kind of get like, here's Netflix, which obviously has a leftist agenda and we have to be worried about it. And then here's Hulu. It's kind of like, oh, silly Hulu. We know you're still here, but no one pays attention to you. And then there's Apple TV where you're like, wow, this is really gripping and actually interesting. Like the question of, was this guy actually breaking the law or did he do something because he had to protect his life? And, you know, who was this person really? And what's the issue? They do a good job here of making this intriguing. And they do a good job with the cinematography. And it looks like they pulled different interviews with him and edited it into at least the trailer. I don't know, man. They make this look compelling. So again, I think this is another one that I would turn on and see if it kept me hooked. Netflix and hug, but Apple TV.
Netflix and hug.
I worry that this is going to go into the all CEOs as evil trope, but at the same time, this seems like it's telling an individual story, right? There was no time that it was sort of like, well, all people are corrupt and all men are corrupt and all CEOs are corrupt. It was
right,
more like there's
the
a mystery here. Yeah, it asked the question, what is going on?
And, right. And is he corrupt? It asked the question, is he corrupt? It didn't say he is corrupt. He said, is he corrupt?
Yeah.
There's a difference there.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm with you on this one. It's a Apple TV and HUG.
Netflix and HUG. Final trailer.
Saw 10 is the latest installment of the Saw franchise to be released this fall. It again stars Tobin Bell as Jigsaw. From what I've heard, it's set in between some of the early movies because, look, the biggest problem with the Jigsaw franchise is, with the Saw franchise is...
That there's 10 of them?
Well, there's 10 of them when they killed off their villain in the third movie, okay? There was... The main creators of Saw were leaving the franchise after the first three movies, so what they did was they killed off their main character and they killed off his apprentice. They killed off his apprentice. So they basically said, go ahead, try to continue this franchise without us. Well, they did, and now we're at Saw 10. And the other seven, or six, because I haven't seen this one, have suffered because of it. Because you had an option, right? Either go the supernatural route, or end the franchise, or do some wacky shit. They did the wacky shit, right? And it makes no sense, playing with flashbacks and things like that. Because Jigsaw is a very sort of grounded, sort of gritty, sort of metal... And I mean, like, literally metal. I don't mean the music metal. Sort of industrial, mechanical villain. And he's one of the greatest horror movie villains ever. So they are doing whatever they could, what they had to do, which was set this earlier in the franchise. There's a couple things I really like about this trailer and one thing I really don't like about this trailer. And I'm interested in what you picked up, William. Because I will admit, I've seen all the Saw movies and I will see this one. So I will tell you what I like and don't like before William hits HUG. What I like is they started this trailer off as a drama before it became a horror movie. And I like that because the better Saw movies always had that element of human conflict. Of what is worth living for and why do I want to live and why do I want to fight to live. And they played with this with the character of Jigsaw. And then I like the second part where when they went into the game, they showed why the game is being played. Every other Saw movie always conceals it and you have to figure it out as the movie goes on. I like that they're going in a different direction. This is why this game is being played. This is why he took these people, he put them in these traps, and why he is, as he says, testing them. As we know, it actually is torturing and punishing them. However, that leads to, William, my concern with this movie. They're making him too sympathetic. Maybe. I haven't seen the movie, but in this trailer, he goes for a cancer treatment. These people pretend to treat him, and then he gets back and finds out he wasn't really treated. And then he starts to put them in a game to punish them, to torture them. I don't know, that's a little too sympathetic for a villain there, right? The point is, he's torturing people when they don't deserve to be tortured. He's making himself judge, jury, and arbiter. And he's doing that again, so that's why I'm saying I will see it and I want to see where it goes, but I do worry they make him too sympathetic, especially with this whole, they did stuff about the medical insurance industry later on in the Saw franchise. HUG.
Netflix and HUG.
So,
Hold on. I'm going to see this in theaters, though. I'm not going to watch it on Netflix. I'm going to see it in theaters.
All right. In that case.
Okay. Thank you.
I have not seen any of the Saw movies. I liked the drama aspect of the trailer, and I was just out when it comes to the torture, Justin. I just don't like that on the screen, that kind of stuff. Even I get what you're saying about them making it too sympathetic. Maybe they're going to make a Walter White arc out of this. I don't know. But I'm just not interested in this, Justin. This is just not for me. Tackle.
You saw what I saw, though, that this guy's supposed to be like this crazy, insane, like on the level of Jason and Freddy and Michael Myers. And they made him sympathetic in a way.
Yeah, but if they do it as a downfall, right, where he does go insane because of it, then maybe that would be compelling in a way. But I don't know. The trailer makes it seem like he's too sympathetic.
I see what you're saying. So any sort of redeeming characteristic he had in the first one of like live or die, make your choice, trying to help people, that's gone now after this experience.
Yeah.
That could be interesting. I see where you're going. All right, William, that brings us to the end of this trip. What did we learn?
That the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League has indelible ripples in the industry even today. Justin, what did we learn? What did you learn this trip?
I learned, based upon what you just said, that even at 40 years old, my masculinity is threatening to society.
That's true. True.
All right, I want to thank everybody for listening. If it wasn't for you, this would just be me talking to the corner of my closet like a crazy person. It still is that. You just make me feel a little bit less crazy, especially when I'm directly addressed by the Barbie movie. Yeah, Greta Gerwig, I heard you. I heard you. And if you heard her and you want to keep supporting us and not her, you can do so by going to midside.com/store, picking up some merch, themidside.com/Patreon, or themidside.com/locals. That's how we keep the lights on. Or the best way to support the Midside and to fight Greta Gerwig is to tell a female friend about the Midside. How mad would that make Greta Gerwig, William, if she knew women were listening to the Midside and they were supporting someone who supported the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League? This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Aliens exist. You know, there's new Futurama episodes on Hulu. I haven't even watched them yet.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Maybe I'll put one on right now while I'm editing.
Yeah, I've got to give them a chance. Can we have comedy again? Somehow I think no.